You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture with your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're going to talk about a film called Don't Worry, Darling. But I'm here to tell you there's plenty to worry about. Plenty to worry about. We're going to go through all the serious Hollywood gossip and drama behind the scenes of this thing. Oh, I wish I was a fly on the wall for any of this crap. Then we'll get into plot-spoiling territory as we get into the film. I will walk you through the whole film. Then when we wrap it up in the conclusion, I'm going to tell you exactly what it all meant, according to me. I'm going to tell you what that red plane was all about. I'm going to tell you what Frank's talking about with chaos and order and how that fits into the occult and the Illuminati. Frankenstein, the digital matrix these nerds want us trapped in. I got hella clips and fun facts as we go along, so stay tuned to the show. It's appropriate timing also, given that more nerds ushering us down the apocalypse with the crypto crash from, what's that jerk's name from the FTX thing? Don't leave your cryptos in the exchanges, folks. Lots of new people getting into crypto and they don't know this. Don't leave your crypto in the exchanges. You gotta back it up into a wallet, perhaps a ledger. They call it a cold wallet, I think. A decentralized digital wallet. Something. Get it off the exchanges. All right? Because you know what? When you're staking your money or you're leaving on the exchanges, these nerds, like homeboy with the fro there, they're using it for themselves to get rich. And you're going to get screwed. Anyway. Nerds, right? Speaking of nerds, you may notice my voice sounds crazy. It's because I'm sick. I'm perpetually sick for the rest of my life, apparently. No, it's 3 weeks going since I got the thing from 2020 that will never went away. I actually thought I had this thing back in January because my lovely wife, Josie, had it. She tested positive. She works with the public, so she was testing. And she's just a good person. She cares, right? And back then, I had tested, and I tested negative, but I was sick at the same time. I was like, okay, I surely have it. No, I don't think I did, because I got it bad. 3 weeks. 3 weeks this thing put me out of commission, but the show must go on. I've got my Halloween 3 coffee mug. Shout out to the great listeners that send me all this great stuff. And in fact, one of my tea bags inspired this. Says, accept who you are in this moment, but acknowledge who you want to become. I want to become your guide. And you know what? Your guide doesn't take days off. So without further ado, let's get into it. Don't Worry, Darling. What's this movie about? It's a new movie. It just dropped. It was in the theaters this year. No one goes anymore. Thank God. I went back and forth on theater life. Now I'm back out. Now I'm like, no. I will pay for the streaming, and I like that the streaming is an option. I like that. Luckily, it showed up on HBO, which I already paid for, so basically free. But what's this movie about? Well, it's a 1950s housewife living with her husband in a utopian experimental community that begin... Wait, I'm reading someone else's thing. A 1950s housewife living with her husband in a utopian experimental community begins to worry that his glamorous company could be hiding disturbing secrets. All right. The trailer, I've seen the trailer before it came out. Didn't look that interesting to me. It looked like Stepford Wives. I was like, man, maybe I'll watch it. Maybe I won't. But it showed up. I said, let me give it a shot. And my advice, should you watch it before I ruin the plot today on this episode? Absolutely. I'm sorry. It was good. I loved it. Even though it was 2 hours, 123 minutes, so very close. Even though it was 2 hours, it was one of my favorite movies. Possibly, without looking at it, probably the best movie of the year for me so far. Who's in it? And this is where we're going to get into some drama. For your mama, all right? The main character, the horny housewife from the 50s here, Florence Pugh. She was the main character in Midsommar, another fantastic movie. She's knocking them down, and she's going to be in Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer that comes out next year. I'm very excited for that. Then we've got Harry Styles, of course. He plays her husband. Young Harry Styles, of course, the child celebrity from the boy band One Direction, a best-selling boy band. And he was in the, you know, the conspiracy people couldn't stop talking about him because he wore a dress. Remember that? He was wearing blouses and dresses and I don't know. Who cares? I mean, come on. David Bowie did this 70 years ago. Is it that controversial? I mean, I wouldn't do it. Like, anyway. But people to get really upset. People get really upset about it, all right? They can't handle it. And I get it, right? It's like, things are changing, scary, whatever. But yeah, so the question is, and, you know, to throw my conspiracy people a bone, the question is, are they using the popularity of Harry Styles and his good looks and his great hair to try to control the culture and society? Probably. Huh. Maybe he's a puppet. Could be. It's happened before. It'll happen again. Now, originally, this role was reserved for Shia LaBeouf, but he got dropped for quote-unquote scheduling conflicts. But then Olivia Wilde, who's the director, she's in the movie and she's the director. I think it might be her directorial debut or her second film. I don't remember. But Olivia Wilde said that it had to do with clashing issues like, quote, his process was not conducive to the ethos that I demand in my productions. That's what she said. But then, just a few months after his replacement, he got sued by FKA Twigs for alleged sexual assault. So who knows what's going on there? Something. Then we've got, of course, Olivia Wilde, the director. She, a very famous actress. Her mom and dad were journalists. She's got an interesting background if you look her up. Her parents' name were Andrew and Leslie Cockburn. Obviously, she changed her name for celebrity isms. And fun fact, her babysitter was Christopher Hitchens. Now, her Wikipedia says that her Scottish ancestors were upper-class elites. And, I mean, you should see the family tree on that Wikipedia. It goes on and on. She's definitely elite Illuminati bloodlines for sure, right? Chris Pine, he's in this thing too. He was in the Star Trek films as Captain Kirk. His father was an actor named Robert Pine. He was in Chips. His mother, Gwynne Gilford, also an actress. You know, there's a funny saying about how no one's really, I can't think of the phrase. I got that brain fog, you know what I'm saying? This phrase about no one's self-made, that's what it is, self-made. Self-made is a myth, they say. Because all these people are connected. All these people that are actors are always connected. Look at Armie Hammer, same thing. Nick Kroll, he's in this movie for like 2 seconds. He's a comedian and a writer for several shows. Big Mouth on Netflix, The Kroll Show, which I actually loved. I thought it was very funny. I love the Bobby Bottle Service skit. He's a big-time voice actor. He's pretty funny. His father, Jules Kroll, however, is a billionaire. He founded Kroll Inc., as well as K2 Intelligence. That's right, Intel. Run by his other son, Jeremy Kroll. Now, Jules, old Papa Kroll, he went to Cornell. He was a member of the Quill and Dagger, which is akin to the Skull and Bones of Yale, a secret society, right? And they, the Quill and Dagger uses on their pins, they have like a skull with a dagger through it, holding a quill in its teeth. Now, all of that's very strange, right? Let's look up this K2 Intelligence outfit on Wikipedia. It says, formerly K2 Intelligence. It's now called K2 Integrity. It says, K2 Integrity is a risk compliance, investigations, regulatory monitoring, financial crimes, falling asleep. But it says, in December 2012, K2 Intelligence acquired Thatcher Associates, which oversaw the cleanup of the World Trade Center site, the building of the new Yankee Stadium, construction of the Bank of America Tower in Manhattan. So it's kind of intelligence. Strange connections here, right? And then finally, the last actress we will talk about, Kiki Layne. She played Margaret in this film. She said that most of her parts got edited out. And she would go on to say that the best thing about this whole film for her was that she got to meet her boyfriend, Ariel Stachel. Seemed like she wasn't a big fan of this movie. Originally, Dakota Johnson was supposed to play this role. Dakota Johnson, of course, from Suspiria 2018. Now, to keep going with the drama, the press tour of this film was about as good as the film itself. There was this love triangle. You see, Olivia Wilde was married to a guy named Jason Sudeikis from SNL. Ted Lasso, right? Everyone knows Ted Lasso. Everyone loves him, right? And it's a good show. I've seen it. And it's very positive, which isn't really my bag, but that's all right. You know, not everything can be gore and violence and sci-fi and dystopias. Well, she was married to Jason Sudeikis. That is until they started filming this movie and she met a guy named Harry Styles on the set with his great hair. Then, a couple years later during the press tour, Sudeikis would infamously serve her with divorce papers while she was on stage giving a little spiel. Very much not in the manner of Ted Lasso, I should say. Now, let's see here. I'm going to read you from it, from Vanity Fair. They're talking about the film. It says, it's the project where Wilde met Styles, now her boyfriend. It's also linked to an incident in April at CinemaCon where Wilde was served custody papers from her former fiancé, Ted Lasso actor Jason Sudeikis, as she took the stage in Las Vegas to promote the movie to exhibitors. At the time, Sudeikis said in a statement that he, quote, had no prior knowledge of the ambush and would never condone her being served in such an inappropriate manner. Because, he's got that Ted Lasso money he's got to keep rolling in. He can't look like a bad guy. Since then, a judge has granted Wilde's request to dismiss Sudeikis' petition, which asked for Otis and Daisy to eventually reside with him in New York. It was my workplace, Wilde says, referring to the CinemaCon incident without naming Sudeikis, with whom she was in a relationship from 2011 to 2020. In any other workplace, it would have been seen as an attack. It was really upsetting. It shouldn't have been able to happen. There was a huge breach in security, which is really scary. The hurdles that you had to jump through to get into that room with several badges plus special COVID tests that had to be taken in advance, which gave you wristbands that were necessary to gain access to the event. This was something that required forethought. CinemaCon was supposed to be a professional milestone for Wilde, who was about to screen footage from her movie. She didn't miss a beat when she was interrupted by the mysterious envelope. She just carried on with her presentation. I hated that this nastiness distracted from the work of so many different people and the studio that I was up there representing, she says. To try to sabotage that was really vicious, but I had a job to do. I'm not easily distracted. But, sadly, it was not something that was entirely surprising to me. I mean, there's a reason I left that relationship. Hoo-hoo! Shots fired. Sudeikis wants all the smoke. Now, you thought maybe that... I gotta look up her first name again, sorry. Florence Pugh. You thought Florence Pugh was gonna stay out of the drama? She was involved in drama, too. There are claims that she and Olivia Wilde did not get along, but they won't admit it and they won't deny it. According to all the nasty little Hollywood gossipy blogs I looked at for this show. Now, the conspiracies online claim that Pugh was upset with Wilde leaving the set to fool around with Harry Styles during the filming. But he's got that great hair, so I mean, can you blame her? So Pugh ended up kind of taking charge and directing some of the film. That's what the claim is. And Pugh wasn't doing a lot of press. She wasn't publicizing the film after it was over like was expected. And her claim was that she was too busy filming Dune 2, which I'm very excited for. Dune 1 blew my mind. I watched it. Then I immediately watched the old 70s Dune, or 80s, or whatever it was. I'm like, this is so great. I've never been such a nerd. I loved it. Almost wanted to read the books. I'm just not that nerdy. But yeah, very excited for Dune 2. Where was I? Shia LaBeouf posted a video of Olivia Wilde asking him to come back to the film, which was strange because he would be replacing Harry Styles, right? And at some point, Wilde allegedly sarcastically called Pugh Miss Flo, to which Pugh's stylist posted images of her on Instagram and captioned it Miss Flo. I don't know. Apparently, that's a diss. Another idea is that Pugh is dating a guy named Zach Braff, who's like 20 years older than her, but okay. And Braff is buddies with Jason Sudeikis. And since then, Braff, this year, apparently Zach Braff and Pugh have parted ways, right? But she apparently was, you know, taking Sudeikis' side through her friendship. Now, during the premiere of Don't Worry, Darling, Pugh refused to make eye contact with Wilde for 4 whole minutes during the standing ovation. Later, that was debunked. But that was like the big claim. People doctored the footage to make it look that way. Pugh also allegedly didn't like the sexualization of the promotion of this film. She said, "When it's reduced to your sex scenes or to watch the most famous man in the world go down on someone, it's not why we do it. It's not why I'm in this industry." sure, but it definitely makes it more interesting, does it not? You know? And I don't know if Harry Styles is the world's most famous man. I mean, he's up there. Don't get me wrong. I know he's the world's most famous man. But he does go down a bunch. And we're going to talk about that. Then finally, oh my God, so much drama, right? Finally, Harry Styles and Chris Pine. Because, you know, these stars, they do these press interviews and such. And Harry Styles responded to a question. They asked him why he liked the film. A softball, as we would call it in the biz. And he completely botched it. He said, quote, "You know, my favorite thing about the movie is it feels like a movie." It just goes to show you can't have it all. God put built-in checks into this system. You can't look like Harry Styles, have the talent of Harry Styles, and the wealth, and the fame, and the fortune, and be intelligent. Sorry. You just can't have it all. Then later, and finally, probably the biggest thing, which you might be familiar with this part, during the premiere of the film, there's a clip of Harry Styles coming back to his seat because he has to sit next to Chris Pine. And it sure as hell looks like Harry Styles spits on Chris Pine. Now, they've kind of been coy about it. Some people say, oh, Chris Pine is just looking down in his lap. It just so happened to look like that the spit happened, but I don't know. It's a big conspiracy. No one knows. It sure as hell looks like it. So that's all the drama. Good night. Let's get into the movie so we can get into the conclusion where we get all the symbolism breakdowns. Because there's a ton going on in this movie. So, without further ado, let's get into Don't Worry, Darling.
I have it.
Focus, right here.
Let's have a little drink.
You and me.
Always. You and me.
Darling,
all of you wives.
With you all the time.
We men, we ask a lot.
Can't you see?
We ask for strength.
To be
food at home. A house clean. And discretion above all else.
Boys and their toys. At least we know they're getting work done.
Welcome to the Victory Project.
We're all here because we believe in the mission.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
That's right.
What do you think they're really doing out there?
What do you mean?
The one thing they ask of us is to stay here. Where it's safe.
Do you even know what the Victory Project actually is? Have you ever asked?
Do you?
Please. What's actually happening?
Stop it, Alice.
What if this place is dangerous? What if—
Stop it!
No. Jack. It's okay. I'm curious to hear where she's going with this.
I need you to listen to me. They're lying about everything.
We are not going backwards. We're pushing forward.
Everyone is acting like I'm crazy. Not crazy.
Our life together. We could lose this.
I don't trust it. And I don't want to be here anymore.
All right, so the film starts out. We see a bunch of young married couples having a mid-century modern house party. The soundtrack for this film is great, by the way. Very chill, very jazz and whatnot. No album in existence, though, right? At least not on the Amazon Music. I called Bezos. I said, bro, where's the album, man? I don't know why they didn't make an album. It was a great soundtrack. But the couples... Okay, so it's like married couples, right? So you've got Harry Styles and Florence Pugh. Their names are Jack and Alice. Then we'll have, no one else really matters. Nick Kroll's in there, and he is the husband to Olivia Wilde's character, Bunny. So Dean and Bunny. I'll keep you familiar as we go. Now, the next morning, after this party, we see this standard 50s domesticated-looking household. Jack's in a suit and tie. He's headed to work. Alice is making him a little brekkie, which they show many times throughout the film. All right, this breakfast sequence. And it's always bacon and eggs. Which is a nod to propaganda, to Edward Bernays. The king of propaganda. We did three episodes on Edward Bernays back in 2017, I believe it was, or 2018. And we talked about The Century of Self, the big film about Edward Bernays, because it's a very big part of this whole conspiracy world. And the message Olivia Wilde is driving out here, I believe, is to give a nod to Edward Bernays and propaganda as the way of creating culture with the bacon and eggs. Because Edward Bernays told us bacon and eggs was what was for breakfast. Because before then, people just ate like oats and granola or didn't eat at all. He's the one that said, you should have this for breakfast. So they get their little brekkie. The men all drive to work at a place called Victory Headquarters. The women stay home. They clean. They're listening to Frank's radio hour, which is the guy running the whole thing. Frank, played by Chris Pine, is the leader of this Victory Project. And you get a shot of the idyllic town here. You'll see lots of banners that say Victory, but you'll notice they all have the all-seeing eye. And I'm going to put this image on the Instagram. Instagram.com/IsaacWiseHop. Link in the show notes, as always. And caveat, I don't know what happened, but MacBook decided to disable all my screen capturing abilities. I've tried all these softwares. I've tried every browser. I've tried different streaming services. I used to be able to capture these nice high-def images. I can't do it now. I got to find some software. I got to fix this issue pronto. So instead, I'm going to post images of my cell phone taking a photo of the screen of my laptop, which sucks. But we're going to work on it. Stick with me. This happened before. Some updates pushed through. We're going to get around it, though, all right? So go to my Instagram. You'll see all these images I'm talking about for the movie. Now, the eyes you'll see on the Victory logos here and there are kind of like the eyes from Aldous Huxley's The Doors of Perception, which is all about mescaline and using drugs to open up your mind. Kind of, but not quite on this particular image. Well, the women, while the men are at work, they get done with their chores, they listen to their propaganda show by Frank, and they all go to ballet lessons together, taught by Frank's wife, Shelley. Now, you'll notice the ballet element here fits in a lot with the MK Ultra programming ideas when we consider Black Swan had this. The Suspiria films is all about witches at a dance academy. So a very interesting choice here. Well, Frank's wife, she shows up and she introduces the newest member of the Victory community while she plants these themes of Stepford Wives and conformity. They repeat these phrases over and over. We move as one. There's grace and symmetry, right? Well, Alice is hanging laundry. She's back home. Alice is hanging laundry, and she sees her neighbor, Margaret, looking weird AF in her backyard, clutching onto this little red plane. And that's going to play a role in this. We're going to break out what that means in the conclusion. Well, Alice, you know, she's home. She's making steak and eggs, and she smashes an egg in her hand instinctively, and there's no yolk in it. And we don't really know what this means, and it was just an odd thing, and it tells you something is wrong in this town, something is wrong with her sense of reality. Things are not what they seem. It's instantly cluing the viewer into this. Well, she prepares dinner. Jack comes home from dinner or from work and comes home and he's smooching on her and he immediately goes down on her at the dinner table. And she's got this beautiful spread and these plates and everything out. And she's just knocking them all off the table because it's very exhilarating for her. Right. This was the scene in particular she was talking about. Florence Pugh, the actress. But it's a great scene. It was kind of unexpected. Kind of hot, right? Kind of unrealistic. You know what, though? That's what these movies and stories are all about. Escapism. So the next day, the ladies are all at the pool hanging out while the husbands are working. And the towels have that Victory Eye logo again. And Alice, she goes into Frank's house because it's at like Frank's house. They're having the pool party, right? And she starts playing with this model of the town of Victory. And behind her, you can see another Victory Eye logo. This one is almost exactly the one from Huxley's Doors of Perception. Now, which of course came about around the Beatnik time frame, which is your 50s type stuff. Around the 50s. Well, there's a barbecue going on. I don't think this is the same scene as the pool scene. Or is it the same scene? Or is it the next day? Doesn't matter. Frank, played by Chris Pine, he's given a big speech at his barbecue, and he asks everyone, he says, what is the enemy of progress? And you won't believe what they say. Take a listen.
Dean, what is the enemy of progress?
Chaos.
Yes. Oof. Nasty word. Chaos. Merciless foe, that chaos. Energy unfocused, innovation hindered, hope strangled, greatness disguised. I see greatness in each one of you. I know exactly who you are.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
That's right.
I look around, I see another reason why I'm here. Once unfamiliar faces, strangers, one and all, now one brave family. Men like Dr. Collins, one of our first who built this community with me. Thank you, Dr. Collins, for your vision. And adventurers like Bill.
That's right, it's chaos. That merciless foe. And we find out that the Victory Project is all about changing the world and how they're just one big brave family. One brave new world. So Alice, she's walking around Frank's grounds and she sees Meredith again. And Meredith's bugging out. But her man's trying to control her. And she suggests that she's been imprisoned. And she sees... And Alice is just kind of like, whoa, that's kind of weird. Then Alice goes into the house and she sees Jack, that's Harry Styles, in Frank's bedroom trying to fix his tie. They make out and he starts, you know, manually satisfying her again. Only this time, Frank is kind of hiding in the closet a little bit, and he looks over at her. Alice catches eye contact with Frank, and one would think she would abruptly say, oh no, and hop up, right? She does not. They exchange a long look, like, wow, what is going on here, everyone? Am I right? So again, something is a little different here. Now, fun fact, Frank's house is actually a very famous house in Palm Springs called the Kaufman Desert House. This film was the first one ever to shoot the interior of the home. I've never been to Palm Springs. Looks like an interesting place. So we find out that Meredith, who's been bugging, she's been bugging because she took her son out to the desert outside of the housing community, all right, where they're all told to not go. They're like, hey, everyone, you're never supposed to leave your community. The desert is very dangerous. And he was dragging a little red plane, the one that she was clutching earlier. And what happened was the boy ended up going missing because she did not heed the advice. And Meredith claims that they actually took her son, they being the Victory Project, to punish her for not cooperating. But everyone else thinks that he's dead and it's because she's a bad mother and she didn't listen to the rules. Right? Like Frank says, you need order. You need law and order. So they have a conversation, the women, about what their husbands are doing for work. And there was like an earthquake of sorts and they're like, what is happening? And they postulate that maybe they think that Frank discovered something and they're building a weapon underground. But Bunny, she's kind of tripping out over this whole thing. She's like, guys, quit talking about it, all right? Shuts it down. So then Alice, she's intrigued now by all this buffoonery. And the next day she gets out of the house, she goes on this trolley and she sees a red plane in the sky. And it kind of ripples, suggesting something is off. Is it a hallucination? What is this, right? She watches it crash into the mountain, and she's bugging out, and the driver is just acting real dumb. Take a listen.
Do you see that?
You all right, miss?
Yeah, do you see that plane?
I'm afraid I'm not sure what you're talking about.
There's a plane, right. No, oh my God, stop! That plane, it just crashed.
Are you sure?
Yes, you need to drive out there. It just crashed. I can show you where it is.
Drive? No, I don't go that way.
What?
I don't go that way. We need to stay here, where it's safe.
But I can't go out there alone.
That's not my route. I can't.
But what if they need help? Hey. Oh my God. What's wrong with you?
So she sees this plane crash. The trolley driver is acting like a little trick right now. She jumps off the trolley. She runs into the desert and up this mountain to investigate, even though she's told specifically not to. She gets to the top of the mountain and finds a circular UFO-shaped glass house. She approaches. She touches the windows. And bam, she goes into a trip sequence. Now, fun fact, they call this the headquarters of Victory, this UFO-shaped glass house, and it is actually called the Volcano House in the Mojave Desert. It's owned by a guy from PBS, Huell Hauser. So anyways, when she touches the glass, we hear Frank saying a bunch of stuff and about how he's reaching for equality and chaos, and all we crave is order as a species. Take a listen.
We cannot go. We cannot go of what society has taught us to fear. We can let go of the chaos that reigns under the auspice of equality. We can fall deeper into what we know is true. That we crave order.
So Alice wakes up in her home. She tries telling Jack all this, and he's like, "You're just being silly." And she starts tripping balls a little bit. First, she gets sort of smashed up against the glass at her home because the bookshelf sort of smushes her. Then she's dancing, and she sees a reflection of herself as Margaret. She runs home, and she sees Margaret slicing her own throat and jumping off her roof. But then these men in red show up and snatch up Margaret. But Jack, he don't believe none of this crazy nonsense, right? He's doing what the people call gaslighting, right? He's gaslighting her. He's like, "No, babe, you're crazy. Things are fine." And he's more of the attitude of like, "You're going to mess all this up. We're living in a fantasy world, and you're going to mess it up with all this wacky nonsense." And she starts unraveling. There's this horrific scene. She wraps saran wrap around her head and almost kills herself. So anyways, Dr. Cooper, the town doctor here, he shows up. Oh, big pharma here with the solution. A prescription, right? To keep her relaxed, he says. So she takes it. She fills up the bathtub. Uh-oh. And we see the zoom in of the all-seeing eye. She starts seeing the sequence of the dancers, and she wakes up in the tub. Now, I think this is all on purpose because, like I talked about with the Aaron Carter show, the bathtub is a portal. It is a portal much like the mirror, the Alice in Wonderland type stuff. We've talked about it many times. In fact, I just did an episode of Breaking Social Norms with my wife about bathtubs and the occult symbolism of that. And that show is intended to be me breaking down subjects for people brand new to all this stuff. So you can take a listen to that. It dropped in, you know, November 22. So anyway, she's unraveling, right? And the whole crew, they go to the jazz club for the big event, right? I think they call it the Dollhouse. And there's a band with an all-seeing eye logo, the Dollhouse Brass Band, which is a fitting choice for the theme of this film. And Frank does a big presentation to announce that Jack is getting promoted. was getting promoted to the senior advisory board. And this is like the inner chamber of the Illuminati, right? He's being initiated. He's advancing in rank. Which makes sense, because guess what Jack's actual name is in the film? It's Jack Chambers. He's being invited into the inner chambers. Like any good secret society, it's built like stackable Russian dolls. So Jack is on stage, dancing like a monkey for Frank. Alice is trying to process all this crazy stuff going on that she's been witnessing with everyone. And Bunny tries to help her out. Frank and Jack, meanwhile, on the stage, they're getting everyone riled up. They're chanting, "Whose world is it? Ours." And we find out Jack is supposed to be promoted to a thing called Operation Extract, which will make sense when you know what is going on in this film. So Jack and Alice, they got this promotion, big deal, right? They throw this huge dinner party for everyone, including Frank, who corners Alice and tells her, like, "Look, I'm on to you." But he's actually okay with it, he says, because every great pioneer needs someone to push them to their limits. Like, he's whispering this to her, right? So now she knows, like, something for real is up. So Alice does just that. She tries to open the eyes of everyone at the party and reveal Frank as a big manipulator. And she says, "Isn't it odd how we're all from these same places? We all went on the same honeymoons to the same locations. How all the food comes from one place here, comes from Victory Foods, and it's probably poisoned. Like GMOs in America, right? I think our food's poison." She says, "Frank is messing with everyone's head, and there's something very wrong here." But Frank, of course, sweet talks his way out of it. Everyone thinks Alice is just paranoid. Everyone leaves, and Alice talks Jack into leaving town, because she's like, "I need you, Jack." And Jack's like, "All right, babe, fine. Like, I'll give it all up for you, all right?" but not so much. He's in the car waiting for her, and she's grabbing her stuff, and here come the red suits. And they snatch Alice up for level 2 brainwashing, and Jack's like, "Ah, damn it." Because he's not giving this up. He snitched on his own wife. And they put Alice through this electroshock therapy, very reminiscent to Requiem for a Dream, if you've seen that film. And she channels through some memories of what we later find out more about. She got these memories of Jack with an American accent, because he's speaking in an English accent the whole movie. And Jack's talking about how he's unemployed, and Alice is a surgeon. And, you know, in this memory, Jack's just at his computer like a total schlub, total loser. Alice comes home from work as a surgeon, and she's like, "Did you fix the hot water heater at least?" And he's like, "No, I tried to call the plumber, couldn't get a hold of one." She's like, "Well, did you at least get dinner going?" He's like, "No, sorry." You know, he's just a putz, right? Now, ironically, fun fact here, the Weishaupt's hot water heater went out a couple weeks ago, and it was a Saturday morning, right? And Josie's like, "We need some hot water. Call the emergency plumber." I said, "You got it." Called my man. He says, "Dude, I'm out of town. I can only fix it on Monday." And I used to be a mechanic back in the day, so I can fix some things, all right? And Josie says, "Well, we're not going to have no hot water, right?" I was Jack in this situation, but I manned up. And you know what? For $30, I replaced the, what was it called? I think it's called a thermocouple. Wasn't too bad. Pretty easy. Bam. Fixed it. Hot water in the Weishaupt household. So I thought it was great that we were watching this, right? We were watching this movie after your boy came through in the clutch. And it was almost a juxtaposition where it was like, "Look, Josie, you could be with Harry Styles. He looks great. He's going down. Going down before dinner. He's doing all the things, but he can't fix a hot water heater like your man." So anyway, a little segue. But yeah, he's a total, in this memory, he's a total loser. He's not dressed in a suit. He looks like a bum. He's watching, he's on his computer watching these YouTube inspirational videos like Andrew Tate or something, right? These losers trying to tell men how to be real men. Like, well, you know what? And it's this guy on the computer telling them how to live peak male life. You know these male skills people. You got to get in the ice bath every day. Run 10 miles. CrossFit, right? So anyway, she has this memory, and we're like, what was that? What was that about? We don't really know. Well, then, and she runs through all these weird experiences, and you hear how this same, Andrew Tate, male skills, people shaming, men shaming other men, right, is what it is. You hear how modern society has driven men from their biological destiny. Take a listen.
I mean, I suppose the primary question is, do you know anyone who's truly happy, right? Or satisfied? Modern society has smothered our true selves and driven us from biological destiny. I see that version of yourself that you've buried deep that everyone else ignores. That is the real you. I know that you are the man you say you are.
So there's very much some cult-like behavior going on here. And the video we see says organized chaos on the screen that Jack is watching on this YouTube, right? Plus, if you look, you'll see a James Bond poster on the wall. And, because he admires the pinnacle of male dominating warrior womanizing stoicism. That is James Bond. But also 007 is John Dee, right? Let's stick with the occult symbolism here. The big alien magician from Queen Elizabeth, John Dee, 007. Because, the whole James Bond series is based upon occult ideas. Dr. No was Aleister Crowley. So anyway, Alice and Jack, after she gets her level 2 brainwashing, they arrive back home. Things seem fine. Trigger more crazy memories, and Alice is bugging out, and she witnesses the whole origin story here back in the real world of what is really going down. This is the reveal of what is happening, why all these strange memories are flooding back. We find out that her husband, this loser, the strung out loser, Jack Chambers, he is instead application 426. Take a listen.
Victory Project, applicant number 426. Name, Jack Chambers. Age, 29. Blood type, O negative. Psychological evaluation, fair. Chosen nationality, British. Chosen wife, Alice Warren. Pre-existing relationship? Yes. Do you understand the discretion required to be a part of this community?
Yes.
Do you understand the consequences of indiscretion?
Yes.
Are you aware that you are responsible for preparing your home device system?
Yes.
Do you consent to the physical and medical requirements for entry to Victory?
Yes.
Are you aware that you are responsible for the physical upkeep of your chosen life?
Yes.
Are you aware that you must exit the simulation through Victory headquarters every day and return only for your allotted number of hours?
Yes.
Darling, I miss you all the time. Can't you see I want to be with you all the time? Can't you see I want to be with you all the time?
Welcome to the Victory Project. There are currently 72 active users. Your re-entry has begun.
The auspice of equality. We can fall deeper into what we know is true. That we crave order. Can we yield to nature's hierarchy? Allow your consciousness to sink into this world, into this truth. Sink deeper into the way things are supposed to be.
So it turns out Jack is just a scuzzy loser who signed up for this Victory Project cult. And the film shows Alice in the real world, right? We're talking about, let me be clear here. So there's this real world where the Victory Project YouTube video, Jack's a loser, can't fix the hot water heater, right? And his wife Alice is a hardworking surgeon, but Jack's a loser. Then there's this Matrix world where Jack's wearing the suit and tie, he's getting promoted, and they're living in the 1950s, horny housewife, everything's great. Well, the real world is Jack's a scuzzy loser, and he fell for this Andrew Tate male skills thing, project, Victory Project. And in the real world, Alice is actually strapped into a bed, unconscious, with an IV and these goggles on, like Clockwork Orange. And he's even, and Scuzzy Jack is putting eyedroppers in her eye to keep her eyes moist. And she's full brainwashed. And what's happening here is Jack is tending to her and he's singing to her to console her because they're both plugged into the Matrix, but Jack has to every night go back to the real world where he's Scuzzy Jack. But his Alice never leaves the Matrix. She's always plugged in because she can't know that there's a real world. So he goes back to the real world and he puts eyedroppers in her eye and he's singing to her. And that's what makes her realize the singing, because she hears him singing it in the Matrix world. But he always sings it to her to console her in the real world once she's strapped into the bed. So Jack apparently does this every night to keep her comfortably numb. Then Jack's back into the Victory Project. And worse yet, he's eating from a tuna can in the real world. He's getting a little snack. He's eating a tuna can. But in the Matrix world, I don't know if you caught it, but he made Alice give up on her beautiful tuna spread that she had ready for the dinner. What a jerk. So Alice realizes everything going on right now. And Jack is like, he knows now the gig is up. And he's like, think about your life and what you actually want. And she's like, guess what? I have a life. And he's like, yeah, but you work all the time. You're always bitching about working. And she's like, I like working. Take a listen.
It's going to be okay. I can explain.
What the fuck is going on?
Look at me. You're my wife.
What the fuck
I love
is
you.
Happening?
I love you.
No. No. You can't say that. You don't love me. No,
don't do
you
that. Don't do that. Alice, just think. Think about your life and what you actually want.
You're psychotic. Mm-mm. I had a life. You took my life.
No, I saved your life.
It's not true.
No, listen to
That's
me.
Not true.
You worked all the time.
I wanted to work. I loved working. What?
You were miserable. You were so unhappy. You hated your life.
It was my life. My life. You don't get to take that from me.
I gave this to you. I gave you all of this, Alice. We are lucky to be here. Frank built this world so that we can live the life that we deserve. I have to leave every day just to make enough money to keep us here, and I fucking hate every minute of it. I fucking hate it, Alice. You get to stay here, and you're happy. You're happy. That's okay. Alice. perfect in here. Don't you want to be perfect with me?
Now, this is a huge philosophical question. We're going to come back to this here very shortly in the conclusion. But first, I'd like to say, Jack, you can come save me. I'd appreciate you. I will be your horny housewife in the digital matrix. If you could save me from the dead day job. So anyway, Alice, she goes on to say how she's mad because he was gaslighting her this whole time. Now the gig is up. And then he's sobbing and crying and grabbing on her, and she grabs a drink glass, very symbolic, right? Like old 50s madmen drinking their little whiskey, and she smashes him in the melon with it and kills him. Bunny, Olivia Wilde's character, she walks in, and she's like, oh, damn. You smashed his melon in with the whiskey cup. And which was a sturdy cup, by the way. I don't think you could do that in real life. And she's like, look, Alice, I'm going to tell you the truth about everything. I know what's going on. And she's like, here's the issue that you've got right now. You just killed Jack in the Matrix world, but he actually died in the real world. Scuzzy Jack just died. You bashed his melanin. And now they're going to come kill you in the real world. And, you know, Bunny knew the whole ordeal because she chose this life. And the reason we find out is because she wanted to be with her kids, because apparently they died in the real world, but she can live in this delusion of the Matrix where it seems like her kids are there. She just wants to be with her loved ones in this artificial way that feels close to reality because reality is too painful. She chose the Matrix for the exact reasons I laid out 10 years ago in my very first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory. I talked about the digital Matrix, how it's the ultimate endgame, and that's how they're going to get us in. Through the promise of a simulation world that feels so real and you can be with your loved ones forever. Which I got to admit, that sounds great. Sign me up. But we all know that these nerds can't pull it off. There's no way to replace the emotional state of being human. They think they can do it digitally. They cannot. But anyway, get my first book. It's free. If you're new to all this, if you don't know what I'm talking about with the digital matrix, you got a lot of catching up to do because time is running out. Go to IlluminatiWatcher.com. It's time for Grifter Alley. Go to IlluminatiWatcher.com. Get it free right now. Hit the Start Here tab. I got links for it everywhere. Check the show notes. Check everything, right? Now, Grifter Alley. That's my favorite segment of every show, okay? But it's a free book. Is that grifting if I'm giving it to you for free? Now, Alice, she's doing the dash, right? She's like, oh, snap, I'm about to get hemmed up by the red coats again. And she heads to Victory Headquarters with the big UFO houses, right? Because she's like, I'm going to go back to the real world before these people catch me, before they kill me. And it plays out much like Truman Show, with like trucks backing up, trying to block her when Jim Carrey tries to escape the island. Remember that? Fun fact, Wilde cited Truman Show and Inception, two great films, as inspirations, which is probably why I love this film so much. Can't go wrong with those two films. Funner fact, I did a show, I did an episode on The Truman Show. I don't remember when. I know I've done it before. Didn't I? No. It was in my book, Conspiracy Theories in Unpopular Culture, the book. I might have done an episode too. I don't know. Check it out. Check it out and get back to me. Meanwhile, back at Frank's house, things are unraveling. Alice is getting away. That's a big problem for Frank and his whole victory project, Utopia. His wife, Shelley, she grabs the kitchen knife. She stabs him right in the chest with it and says, stupid man, it's my turn now. Setting up the sequel of the female-dominated Matrix, hopefully. Meanwhile, Alice makes it back to the headquarters, and a spirit of Jack shows up and embraces her and tells her not to leave him. Very sad, very tender moment, to be honest. But she's like, nah, bro. And she jacks out of the Matrix and says goodbye to all the great things. And that's where the movie ends. And I stood up from my couch. Bravo, Olivia Wilde. Fantastic movie from start to finish. In conclusion, let's wrap it up. This whole film was based on the digital matrix coming into reality. You could argue memes becoming reality, right? We saw that with Pepe the Frog and Keck. We talked about that for several episodes in the last 4 years. You go to Vanity Fair with their description of the movie, it says this. They also went down the rabbit hole of what Wilde calls the disenfranchised world of white men on the internet. Scouring 4chan, studying YouTube algorithms, researching groupthink perpetuated by social media and incel leaders. Quote, I have a sick fascination with cults, Wilde says. So there's a lot there, right? And that's kind of what I said. It seems like when Scuzzy Jack is on YouTube getting lured into this cult, it's very much this insane man skills nonsense, whatever this archetype is, of men shaming other men because they're not manly enough. And she says that in the film, the men are incels, which isn't necessarily true because Jack is married to Alice in the movie, right? In real life. If you don't know what incels are, it means involuntarily celibate. And supposedly these forums like 4chan and 8chan are just loaded down with these people. These are the ones that turn the Pepe the Frog meme into reality. But it's all about insecure men who try to coerce women and feel the need to control women's destiny and their choices and their bodies. It's like a control thing, right? And Jack is, I guess, more or less an incel. Because in the real world, Alice is the breadwinner. She's the surgeon, and Jack's a loser. He's a scuzzy loser. He can't fix the hot water heater. And he can't even cook dinner. Can't even cook dinner. So he's like, you know what? I'm gonna be a real man. Andrew Tate tell me to take control of my own way. I'm going to do it out of coercion. And of course, the jazz club in the Matrix there in the 50s Matrix is the dollhouse because it's about using women as dolls for just male gaze and male pleasure. And Wilde says that Frank, as Chris Pine, you know, Frank's character was based on Jordan Peterson, who she claimed the incel community looks up to as a hero. She said, quote, they believe that society has now robbed them, that the idea of feminism is working against nature, and that we must put back into the correct place. No, we must be put back into the correct place. Sorry. That's what Olivia Wilde said. But to me, the big philosophical question to consider here is, is it a perfect world? Okay. The men go to work. The women stay home. And they clean the house and they gossip and they drink by the pool and they're making dinner. Seems great. That's from my privileged white male chauvinistic perspective. It sounds like the life. It sounds like everything I would want to provide and give to my wife. So Josie, you know what? You don't got to work no more. I got you, fam. But the truth is we've actually had this actual conversation at our house. And I even agreed with it. I was like, look, you've got a skill and you've worked a whole career. You're now an expert. And I wouldn't want to give that up to stay home and clean the house all day. I wouldn't want to do it. Even if the money didn't make sense. Not that that's our situation, but like, you know what I'm saying? Even if the money didn't make sense, like it's nice to have a social outlet. It's nice to go and work and feel like you're contributing to the household, you know? Like imagine just cleaning the house every day. Like that would drive me nuts. So like I didn't even want her to take that option, but I was like, if you want to, we can do that. I actually didn't want that. Neither did she. But I mean, but let's put on our male chauvinistic hats for a minute, all right? You know, you go to work, come home, you go down on your wife, have a little dinner, have some nice whiskey drinks and some party with your friends. I mean, it sounds, and everyone seems thrilled with this arrangement. But are the women happy in this world? That's the question. From my perspective, I think, look, I hate the dreaded day job. I hate it. So what a gift for me to pursue, to liberate someone else from their dreaded day job. But women don't look at it the same way. They get some kind of self-worth from the job, just like some men do. Some men love going to work, not me. You can miss me with that bullshit all day. However, I don't want to be unemployed either, because that's depressing too. I've held a job since I was 13. When I got out of the military, I had about 6 weeks. I was collecting unemployment, the first time I've ever collected it, and I made it about 6 weeks before I was like, I got to get a job. This is a nightmare. It was the year 2003. Blockbuster was in existence. I had a unlimited pass at Blockbuster. I would go and rent 3 movies. I'd go watch them. I'd go back and get 3 more movies the next day. While my wife went to work serving tables at the Olive Garden. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I was so depressed. At first, I was like, this is great. So I don't know what the right answer is. I certainly don't like working, but I certainly don't like not working either. But anyway, Olivia Wilde, she based the film on what they call second wave feminism and a book called The Feminine Mystique that talks about how truly unhappy all those 50s housewives were that were doing this exact thing of staying home and cleaning and all that stuff, right? They called it a lingering sense of dissatisfaction. And it's kind of a lack of intellectual stimulation, which makes a ton of sense. I get that. And it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I always try to compare everything to that. The more you secure those bottom levels of, you know, food, shelter, like you're not starving anymore, you got a shelter over your head, things are stable. Well, you don't just find happiness in that. You end up evolving, and you keep evolving. Like to someone who's poor and destitute, they would think, wow, you have a house, and you got food, and you're not cold at night. Like, that's paradise. But after a while, you know, even if you put that homeless person in that situation, they would try to evolve higher. They were like, I need more for satisfaction. And the real issue in the film was gaslighting. He was gaslighting her. He was coercion, manipulating her without her input into this. Maybe she could have been like Olivia Wilde's character. She could have been like, let's do it. Put the droppies in my eye. Eat your little toonie pouch. I'm staying. But Scuzzy Jack didn't do that. He forced her into it. He should have asked her, got her buy-in, but no, he manipulated her because he fell for this Andrew Tate male-dominated nonsense where it's like, no, the men make the decisions. They don't ask anyone, especially not their woman, not their wife. I'm here to tell you that's the wrong way of thinking. And from his dumb perspective, which it wasn't necessarily wrong. He was just misguided. He was like, you were miserable. Like, you would constantly complain about how you were working extra hours. And you're always tired. He's like, you wanted this, even though he never asked her. And I think that's actually a real issue here. A lot of people, they identify with their jobs so hard, so much. They boast about their misery. They find comfort in their misery. They find comfort in their slave master, a martyr complex, if you will. They get value out of it. They're like, I'm so important, I have to be at work for 12 hours a day, every day. Oh, the boss is calling me on the weekend. Ugh. Yeah, you know what? If my boss called me on the weekend, I wouldn't answer the motherfucker. I'd hang up on him. But I'm also not a good company man, so. So there's that. All right, now that's all the, like, regular talk out of the way. Let's quickly go into the occult realm. There's lots of talk in this film about chaos and order, which makes me think of chaos magic, of course, right? Using whatever elements to conduct magical operations that one desires. But that's not really what this is. In this film, It's, to me, more about this right, alt-right, right-wing adoration of law and order. All right? Fascism, if you will, on the extreme end. And the whole idea is that it's like, you know, Trump announced he was running for president and he said that he was going to kill drug dealers. Like, they're all going to get the death penalty. And that's what this sort of fascist dictator thought is. It's like, well, you don't want the death penalty, just don't sell drugs. That's what people say. And like, they're not wrong, right? Like, sure. There's rules. Like, we got to have rules. But to me, there's always this gray area where it's like, man, I don't know. Like, I don't think we should give them the death penalty. Like, some people make mistakes. Some people get backs up against the wall. Some people go bankrupt from medical debt. I mean, like, not everyone that's homeless is just lazy or on drugs. But the whole idea here is this law and order obsession that, you know, one person knows better than the other and they should make the laws and maintain the order. And that's what Scuzzy Jack does to his wife. That's what Frank is trying to do here. And people like this idea because they're like, well, as long as you follow the rules, you won't have any problems and everything will be perfect. And then everyone who violates the rules, they deserve what they got. And again, the problem here is that our world is not black and white. It's a state of gray. We are humans. We are all flawed. We all fall short of the glory of God. And we have to turn the other cheek and give forgiveness to each other. Now, you do have to have law and order. I'm not saying people should just do whatever they want. But this is the engineer mindset is what you're seeing here with Frank, who, of course, is a software engineer. He created a digital matrix. Matrix thinking black and white, law and order. Because, and I've done software programming, there's rules and lines of coding, and it's very simple. You make this little world, and you're like, here's the rules. It's perfect. There's no flaws. There's no glitches. There's no problems. Everything's perfect. And that's what they think they can do, is create the matrix, which is a perfect place. A place where they can enforce all the rules. And, you know, it's just not possible. Human nature is completely unpredictable on stuff. You can't make a digital matrix that's going to emulate every feeling of the real world. You just can't. You can't. I took a class called Digital Signal Processing. And you would take an analog signal, like music, for instance, right? And you would sample it. You would sample this waveform into bits. And the idea was, if you did it at the high enough sampling rate, you would have perfect fidelity. You wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a record and a digital stream, an MP3. And I think to the untrained ear, that's probably true. But to some people, like audiophiles, they'll tell you, no, there's a difference. I can hear it. I can't, but hey. And I think the matrix world and the real world is kind of like that. It's like love. How do you get the fidelity of love? How do you feel that feeling? And when you watch these movies like The Matrix and Don't Worry, Darling, they make it look like they could actually reproduce that through signal manipulation of the brain. Just a series of inputs and outputs, and they can just digitize all of it. And it's just not possible. We also had parallels to Alice in Wonderland, right? The main character, her name is Alice, of course. She is Alice in Wonderland. She approaches many mirrors and windows and bathtub portals. That's what this film is all about, portals. They go back and forth through that UFO house. That's the portal. In between worlds, they're crossing dimensions. And oh, by the way, Alice's neighbor, Olivia Wilde's character, is named Bunny. She is following the bunny. And of course, Alice in Wonderland it's kind of like Doors of Perception, which is the symbol you see throughout the film. It's all about expanding your awareness, understanding the world isn't what it seems. And that's what she goes through. And then you've got Frankenstein. A reference here is Frank, who's Chris Pine, and his wife Shelley, Well, that's a reference to Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein. So Frank and Shelley, right? Get it? They're the main couple. And the whole story of Frankenstein is about Mary Shelley, who was an occultist, and so was Lord Byron. They were actually in a castle occupied by a very famous alchemist when she wrote that story. And the story is about man trying to become God and creating his own perfect being, or perfect world in this situation. And you know how the story of Frankenstein goes. Didn't turn out so when he threw the girl in the pond. Oh, then we got the red plane. What does the red plane mean? Well, the theory that makes the most sense to me, because I don't know, is that Margaret had the red plane with her son in the desert. Remember that? And she used that red plane somehow as a guide when Alice was in the trolley. Remember seeing the little glitch? It's like Margaret was outside of the Matrix and she was able to finagle this red plane to grab her attention. And she used it as a guide for Alice to go find the Victory headquarters, the portal, the jump spot. She was guiding Alice to it. And again, it's like Alice in Wonderland, where she's following the White Rabbit in a way. And you recall how Margaret seemed to supernaturally attempt contact with Alice in that dance studio mirror. Remember that? I don't know if you remember that in the movie. So it's like she was able to cross portals somehow. Then finally, the obvious, the Matrix, the simulation world. This is where the nerds want to take us. I talked about it this whole show. You know, they want us, in some ways, they want us to believe in flat Earth. They want us to believe in simulation world theory. When the truth is, I think, my belief is that God created this world. Our souls inhabit these bodies for this experience. And then after this experience, we move on to something else. And these nerds are trying to become God. They think they are the Frankenstein. They're trying to make a simulation world for us to live in. They want to be gods in their world. Case in point, Elon Musk. Why do you think these nerds want to buy the news and they want to buy Twitter? He wants to own the world. Mark Zuckerberg owns the Facebook world, the Meta world. They like that you have to follow their rules. They're psychopaths. Elon Musk is a total psychopath. He's a total, and I know people are so back and forth on Elon. I've never liked the guy. I don't trust the guy. He's a nerd that's going to kill us. He's not a genius like they say he is. He's a charlatan. He promises all these things that never, you know, oh, Tesla trucks. When did he announce Tesla trucks? 5 years ago? Have you seen a Tesla truck ever? You seen self-driving trucks ever? And then, oh, Twitter, yeah. And then he fired all these people from Twitter, and then he's telling everyone else that sticks around, like, you have to work all these crazy shifts, and it's going to be brutal, and you're going to hate it, and he won't let anybody telework, and, like, he's a total jerk. He's a capitalistic, psychopathic jerk. And, you know, stockholders love it. They eat that up. They're like, yeah, be a rotten slave master, and don't let people go home. That's perfect. That's what they want. That's why Google and all these places, they have snacks and vending machines. They're like, oh, just stay here, you know, take a nap, sleep at your desk. You know, they want you real comfortable at work. Anyway. And also, by the way, did you see the Oculus Rift VR goggles, right? They made goggles that actually kill you. You play the game and there's high stakes, it'll kill you. I mean, I don't think anyone's really going to play this, but maybe, right? They have similar games that do similar things. Like, there's a game where if you play it and you die, it like deletes random files on your computer and stuff like that. But all of this is, you know, and that's what's fascinating about this movie, is it's just exploring that philosophical question of the digital matrix, because as Ray Kurzweil points out, the singularity is near. I mean, we're like, what, 20 years from having to make this choice of, do we live in the matrix forever or do we die here on Earth? Interesting topics. If you want more on that, again, you can get my first book for free. If you go to IlluminatingWatcher.com, hit start here. You sign up for my free email newsletter. It's going to email you a link, and you use that. You get the free ebook of A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, where I first talked about The Matrix 10 years ago. And I've talked about it in many books. I think The Dark Path, we had a whole section on it. It's the thing that keeps rearing its ugly head, because that's where we're headed, right? Like, mankind cannot avoid technology. Mankind must evolve constantly. Like, we're drawn like moss to the flame to these phones and technology. It's wild. Anyway, thank you for listening to the show. I have a link in the show notes for all this crap I'm always talking about. And until next time, stay woke.